All right. Oh man. All right. Well, give everybody a few minutes to go in there. Oh, I love when I get the email about us going live, like as we go live. It's just so much more fun for me. So anyway, hi everybody. Welcome to the Toddcast. I am gorgeous John, and with me is handsome Tim,
Handsome Tim.
as we have discussed what our names were going to be. So good times, good times. I don't know why it's not letting me see the chat this time. Give me a second. Oh, there it is. I'm gonna go this way.
And
Sorry. All
I don't have anything to
right.
add as far as photos go.
Oh, well, good, because I have actual pages out of one of the books today because it was so
Oh,
ridiculous.
cool. Nice.
They're like photos I took, but whatever, it'll work. Just so you guys know, first, always, as always, like, subscribe, share,
Hit the
comment,
bell.
all the things so that more people dig us. We are creeping closer to that 100 mark.
So close.
We
So
really
very
wanted to hit it by the
close.
new year. We did not hit that, but we are very, very close. So help us out,
We didn't hit it
bros.
yet. We've still got 8 days left.
Help us out, people. It'll be a good time.
We can do it.
So coming up, we have the actually first we have this cool comic swap we're going to be part of that Pop Culture Comics is putting on the 2nd of January. So make sure you come and check that out. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Wait, what is this?
It's a Pittsburgh Comic Swap. It's
Okay.
on January 2nd. And it's in a fire hall over by Mount Royal. Check it out. If you go to Pop Culture Comics, or if you search Pop Culture Comics Pittsburgh, I'm pretty sure they have a link on their webpage. The guys over there are awesome. I was just talking
Yeah.
to Tony at the satellite shop today while I was waiting for my
Tony's the
buddy to go to
best.
dinner. He is a good dude. Ken's my favorite though. Sorry, Tony. Ken's awesome. But we're gonna have a couple tables there. It's gonna be a hard comic show in a really small room. So not by really small room, but I mean like there's only gonna be like maybe 30 tables worth of vendors. So
So let's
it'll be
tell
fun.
what is a comic swap for people that
It's
haven't done one.
a mini show. It's like local
Okay.
vendors and shops. So it'll be a good time. We haven't decided what we're bringing yet, but it's gonna be a good time. And
It's
then
not like I'll
yeah,
trade you my Clemente for your Barry Bonds or something, right?
I don't think that will happen.
Okay.
But you know, stranger stuff has happened. And I think it's $3 to get in. So make sure you guys check that out. And then on the 8th of January is the Ohio Valley Store's anniversary sale. Half off dollar books, 10% off back issues, price books, toys, games, graphic novels, and then the first Saturday in February is cranberries. So same deal. Good times. All right. So this week has been absolutely past couple weeks have been nuts. We really apologize for all the missing episodes and then trying to do them and then canceling and going back and forth. Really sorry about that, guys. We will try our best in the new year to be a little more diligent. It's easier when it's not Christmas time. So next year we might just take December off. We'll see how it goes.
But we made it.
But we
Yeah.
did. We did. We're here for you guys. And we got one more in this calendar year, so it'll be a good time. If you hear crazy dogs yelling at each other, there it's just my dogs playing in the background.
All right.
So shit, I had something else and I lost it. Balls. Anyway, So have you guys at the store worn your NDC jerseys, your new jerseys all at once?
I had worn mine, not all at once, but I had worn mine the other day.
Was anyone else wearing theirs when you wore yours?
No. I felt like we were just kind of like, hey, first time we have a sale. Okay. Like everybody's gonna pull them out.
It is pretty freaking sweet when everybody on the floor is like all the employees are wearing it at the same time.
Yeah.
Also, I'm wearing my holiday hat. You can get this on our spread shop, which is on our website. If you go to ndcomics.com, hit shop, scroll down to exclusive apparel. You can get t-shirts, mugs, hoodies. I got a cool vinyl bag. Or canvas bag, sorry, canvas bag. There's like dog bandanas, there's regular bandanas, there's face masks, there's all kinds of stuff. Check that out. It's good times. All right. So since it's been a little crazy, Tim did not have enough time to prepare any comics. So I'm going to talk about a couple comics. And then we're going to mostly talk about Hawkeye and Spider-Man, and with a slight dash of Matrix, because Tim's half into it right now. But you're into it enough to make a judgment. I'm telling you, you are. So we'll do it in that order. So,
all right.
My first comic. I hope this pulls up the right one. Nope, that is not what I wanted. Why does that say it was that? Hold on. All right. Is Ranger Stranger. So this is from Scout Comics. If you go to their website, they have like links to YouTube animated videos that are hilarious. I'm going to read you the first story because it is just how the book sets off. So there are a bunch of little shorts, and this is the ranger with this little girl, and they're both fishing in the lake. And he says, "Do you remember that time when I pulled the chair out and Ranger Stevenson fell backwards, hit his head, died, and everyone laughed?" She says, "Of course, it was hilarious." He says, "I know. The DA feels the same way. I'm being served with a Man's Laughter Award, the highest honor bestowed on a forest ranger. I imagine it's like it, when a queen knights somebody, Sir Garland Woodburn," which is his name. So then there's a panel of them just looking at each other, another of them looking at each other, and she goes, "Manslaughter?" And he goes, "Oh, fuck, that makes more sense." And that is the end of that panel. There are a bunch of really funny things, like the short about the monster in the closet is great. The one with the drone is really funny too. Like, it's like two hikers are lost, and the other ranger crew's like, "Hey, we have a drone looking for these people, and you know, you should help us do it because you know the area better." He's like, "Oh, I don't know what you're saying, but sure." So he takes the controls, and you see them, and they look like they're making snow angels, and and they're like, "Oh yeah, you found them, cool, go in a little closer and see how they're doing." And he like rams the drone right into him, and it's just blood everywhere, and he's like, "Nice. Too late." Oh, it's funny. So the other, like, here's an interior. This one is silent, but it's called Black Friday, right? I'm going to back it up so you can see the whole panel for the most part. All right. So episode 5, Black Friday. Here we see people waiting in line. Starts at 7 a.m. Here we see a bear eating a dude. The other guys are running. Whoops. here's the bear mauling everybody else. The ranger shoots the bear, and everybody else just lines up and gets ready to go into the store when it opens.
It's dead. There's people. Right. No big deal.
This book was so funny. When I was at the Mills the other day, Ryan and I laughed very heartily about this book. It reminds me a lot of like stuff you would have seen humor wise in like Robot Chicken, like early Robot Chicken stuff, like, but with like a, like an Archer style animation. So, but definitely check it out. It's very good. All right. My next book, Octobrinia Love with Love. This was kind of cool. It's like a collection of a bunch of one shots of Octobrina, and some cool, like of her like traveling through time and setting timelines straight and fighting Nazis. It was really cool. I liked it a lot. The art is kind of weird in some of the spots, but I really dug it overall. It's a prestige issue, so make sure you check it out. It's a 50-year anniversary issue as well, so make sure you do that. And then my last book is Odin's Eye from Bad Idea. So this book was pretty freaking sweet. It's about a seer and how like she travels through different realms and actually bites Odin's eye out, and then like there's like the art in this thing is just absolutely phenomenal, because it's Carrie Nord, and like there's a scene where like she's like taking an axe to a cow and the head flies off, and the horse and a pig as well. She just kills a whole bunch of animals to do some bloodletting. There's all kinds of crazy Norse mythological creatures in it. I really, really loved it. And the second issue is already out, so make sure you check that out. And if we don't have it in the shop you're currently going to, ask if we can get it for you, because some of the other shops did have it, like some of our other locations. So, but
I can't, the second issue came out real quick.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Dan just said that Ranger Stranger has a Instagram account. Hold on, I gotta add this shit. Because yeah, did it really? Yup. Done. Oh yeah, you can see some of the stuff on there. That they've definitely put on their website. And some of them are like one of the shorts is actually in here. It's pretty, oh wow, that's funny. Like a happy Thanksgiving with a dead turkey, but it's like really tiny. So yeah, this is the, oh man. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to check that out more later, but don't totally go to that. It is very, very cool. So, all right. I guess now we can talk about some things. All right. First, let's talk about Matrix, since you're almost all the way through it. Okay. What are your thoughts so far?
I think it's messy. I think it's not needed. There were some things like when his boss was talking about how like,
spoilers, people, we're going to talk about some stuff. Some, if you don't want to hear any of this, have a great Christmas and we'll see you next week. All right. Continue.
His boss was talking about, he's like, oh, our parent company, Warner Brothers, they want, I'm like, I don't need this. This
yeah,
is,
the meta jokes were a little rough.
Yeah, it makes it weird. It makes it feel like it's not what, you know, the other movies. It feels like it's not part of that. And I don't know, maybe that's where they were going with. You know, I thought Bugs, I liked that character a lot. Mm-hmm. I would like to see more of that character if they do more movies. It was weird seeing Neo with like a shaved face.
Yeah.
Like, oh, now I know why you have a beard. You have like your face got really weird the older you got.
Yep.
But oh, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to form like a solid opinion on it because I watched an hour and 20 minutes of it. And I'm like, you know,
well, you still have an hour to go.
Like, yes, of course, Matrix movies can tend to be very weird and trying to figure and piece things together. But this one's like just way out there. And I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense. At least so far, it doesn't. I feel like maybe they needed the other Wachowski sister there. Maybe that was the key to making those movies good before, was the balance that the two of them had. And just one of them working on this movie might have been what brought it down. But ultimately, I just don't, it doesn't feel like it was necessary to make it. So
yeah, I feel pretty much the same on all accounts. I was actually pretty excited though to see the cast of Sense8 be most of the supporting cast of this, and them being very mm-hmm. good, because I really enjoyed that show a lot, and the Wachowskis did that too. So that was good. I think the action sequences are great, but it just feels very out of place and not. I'm like, why did we even need this? Like, yeah. no one asked for this. Like,
yeah.
Who asked for this movie to happen? But
yeah, the action sequence do help keep you going.
Yeah,
because they make it fun.
But. Yeah, I mean, I gave it like a 3 out of 5 overall. Yeah. Neil Patrick Harris is an excellent villain, by the way, the rest of it, like I said, like the action sequences really are what you watch a Matrix movie for anyway. The thing that really like was jarring for me, and I didn't really like it, was they do use these flashbacks of actual Matrix movies, and like,
yeah,
it's like real weird and random. And I'm like, oh, so dumb.
Like when they were in the theater and it was like playing on the screen. And then he's looking in the mirror and he sees his therapist in the mirror. It's like, that was very weird. Yeah. I didn't like that at all.
I'm okay with the new Smith and the new Morpheus. I understand why they did it that way, but it also kind of sucks that they didn't get the original cast members to come back. But
yeah. I wonder how many of them probably just were like, no, I like where we left it.
Fishburne said he wasn't even asked. So
he wasn't. Apparently, he's Dick on set is one of the things that I had read.
Oh, wow!
High maintenance and a real jerk. But so
I can see that. I can see that. So, all right, done talking Matrix. Let's go to Hawkeye now.
Okay.
So Hawkeye finale aired this week. Mm-hmm. You know, to everyone's happiness, we got to see the Kingpin in the red Hawaiian shirt, which is like verbatim out of one of the books, which is awesome.
He picked that.
Oh, did he?
D'Onofrio. He says he has that he read that arc, and he has that picture as his screensaver on his computer. And he was like, he's like, I want to do this. We need to do this. So
hook me up, guys. Make this happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. I think the highlight of this episode, sounds really stupid, but is to finally see all the trick arrows. Like, we got to see like 40 fucking trick arrows go off in
and to see them making them was cool.
Yeah.
Like that little like scene where it's just kind of like, hey, let's just clock out like 2 minutes of just making trick arrows, and they put the Pym arrow down, and I was like, oh, that's the shrink one. And it did not disappoint. So like, let's see, where did it start? So it starts with Kingpin and the mother wants to get out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
which is just like, wonder why she waited till now,
right,
to get out of the game. There were some weird things with her character in the episode. Trying to think. I love the stuff with the LARPers. I thought it was great.
I'm just glad Grills is not dead yet. Like, he was in the comics. Like, he only made it three issues.
Yeah.
So,
but that was a lot of fun. And then getting to see them like have a bigger role when they're trying to like get everybody escort them out of the building.
Mm.
We should probably talk about the indestructible nature of the Kingpin, because there's some people that say, oh, he had on, like, you know, Melvin Potts made him that suit that was Kevlar. There's nothing that says that this is that Fisk, you know? So,
right.
And you see when he blows up that the white jacket looks like it's a little, like, in tatters on, like, the arms and stuff when he survives that explosion. So I think that this is just them setting the precedence. One, so you know when that off-screen shot happened, that he did not die.
Oh, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that separately. Yeah.
But I think that that's them saying, like, this is more closely to the Kingpin from the comics. It's very tough and almost indestructible, like almost like he's a mutant as far as, like, how tough he is.
Right.
And what he can withstand as far as, you know, damage to himself. So I think this is a completely separate Kingpin from the Netflix shows. There's been talk that, like, you know, this is, hey, they're going to be those characters, but they're not those versions of those characters, that this is separate.
Right. I'd be okay with that as a explanation of it's not exactly the same, but it's,
yeah,
a similar one, even though, like, those events, they showed, like, the Triskelion breaking down from Cap 2 and some other stuff in the show. So it's almost like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is, like, kind of MCU, but not really MCU.
Well, now it's kind of not, because they said that they, you know, there was talk that they were like, we want to scrap that. We want to pretend like it didn't happen. And now we have a new Mockingbird.
So if that's, they didn't call her that, so I'm okay with
they
it.
They didn't, but she had the S.H.I.E.L.D. watch, and it had the Agent 19, and Agent 19 was Mockingbird. So, they didn't call her that, but I feel like, I don't know, maybe they thought that was a little too much to unpack, and it leaves a little bit of a teaser for if they would go for a second season.
And then, like, if, or are they going to use her in Secret Invasion? Is she going to actually be, like, are we going to see, is she a Skrull? And then when we see one, like,
she's been through so much.
And like, then when the other one shows up, like, which, so in Secret Invasion, the one that he's with is the Skrull, and the one that shows up later, like, crashes the Skrull ship, is the original Bobby. So I'm just curious if that's gonna show up, and it'd be like, what's her name from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like, that would be hilarious, and she's just a younger version of this one. She was in, like, cryostasis
for him, to have to go through that. It's like,
all
his
over
family
again.
Disappeared. Then he gets him back, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to have Christmas. And they're like, no, you're not going to have Christmas. And he'd lost his best friend. And
it's going to be crazy. I'm curious to see how that'll pin through. I thought it was good to see the suits, like the actual purple suits. Like, that was awesome.
She's like, oh, you wore it.
I thought the fight with her and Yelena in the elevator to reveal the suits was also really good.
She's like, what are you wearing?
Can I just say that Florence Pugh has, like, the best hair in the MCU?
Yeah.
Like, they just can't go wrong with her braids, man. They're super good.
I like the fight scene through the office space, the vertical one. It was just kind of like them, like just kind of going down the line. The only thing that bummed me out or weirded me out about it was like, you know, she told Kate, she's like, if you get in my way again, I'll kill you. And then they get into this fight in the hallway, and she's either, I just don't see how Kate Bishop is able to be on par with Yelena as far as like the fighting goes. So that was a little weird for me, unless, you know, she's pulling her punches because she really didn't want to kill her. But that part was a little weird for me. But the whole sequence, the fight sequence, and how they did it and pulled that off was really cool. So
shit. So there was another CB or KB nod somewhere else. Because when they did the KB toys, it's Kate Bishop. KB. Mm-hmm. There was one that was a CB something, and I cannot remember what it was now, and it's killing me. I want to say it was in this episode or the one before it. I thought the line going and him getting stuck in the tree was hilarious.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a very Hawkeye thing to happen to you.
Uh-huh. And I'm like, what's this owl all about? Why are they so fixated on him looking at this owl? It seems weird. Yep. And it paid off.
Right. I thought it was cool to see the arrows that like shot off all the little spikes and stuff. Uh-huh. Those were cool.
When he shot the magnet arrow and like all their guns pulled away from
them. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that happened in the comic. There's like a scene in the comic, it might be a cover that they turn into a shirt, and it's just like a bunch of different trick arrows heads, and you have no idea what they do. All of those are addressed in this episode. Like they are all those arrowheads. I also found it funny that they were using the label maker to like,
yeah. So she was like, you need to label these. It was like the first or second, it was the second episode. She's like, really? You need to label these.
I thought the way Echo turned was pretty that's the word I'm looking for.
Organic? I think that's kind of all how organic. We all it was. I think that's how we all saw that going. So
right.
She played just enough of a role in the show that it didn't seem forced.
Yeah.
And that they was able to set up, you know, her show that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So,
so the last scene, you know, we see her and Kingpin have a showdown. You don't see it. It's very, very Killing Joke, right? You don't see it and you hear a gunshot. So a buddy of mine's like, I can't believe they'd shoot Kingpin like that. I'm like, you're an idiot. Like first off, the easiest explanation is this is how we're going to start off the Echo show, like that scene.
Yeah.
And it's either going to be Kingpin grabbing the gun and knocking it out of her hand and it going off, or it's going to be she's standing there and you see Daredevil's baton whip that thing out of her hand or knock it off to the side as he shoots. And that's how we're going to get Daredevil back and everything. So that is how I think that's going to happen.
How neat would it be if she put the gun up to like his ear and then just shot it like behind him, just to like, hey, I'm like, just here's a little bit of my world, like not being able to hear, you know? Right. But I mean, you know, he's not dead. They didn't have him get shot with an arrow, blown up, and hit with a car to have him get killed off screen. Yeah. They're just not gonna do that.
Right.
I thought the thing with the car, with her mom hitting him with the car, that was the weirdest thing in the whole show for me, because it's like I'm in the back seat and the driver's in the front seat and he's dead. And in a matter of about a minute, I got out, I threw him out on the road, I started the car, no one heard it, and I got it all the way down there to get a running start and smash into you.
Right. So it would have been different. Weirdest. Like, it would have been different had it been a Tesla, because then you'd have been like, oh, no one heard it coming.
Yeah. But or a Prius,
Just yeah, like, yeah, or a Prius, yeah. Yeah. But like, you heard that thing coming, and I was like,
yeah.
I was like, no one noticed this car start. Like, yeah. No one.
It was on the same side of the street they were on. So,
but it was like whatever. 2 feet from them.
Yeah. It's like, her mom's in jail. So that's fine with me because she was the more annoying part of the season for me. So,
yeah. I did like the fact that Swordsman ended up being a good guy.
I know that was the good twist for that.
That to me says, yes, they definitely are setting up the Thunderbolts because he was a founding Thunderbolt.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he was an Avenger at one point too, but
yeah,
you know,
it was, I like that a lot because it was like the whole time just waiting for him to be bad, you know. Mm-hmm. And then he's just like, he brought his sword and just wants to have some fun and show off his skills. And
yep,
I thought that was pretty cool.
So, and I love that, you know, the reveal of her mom is the one who killed Armand. I was like, what? Like, yeah, that's crazy. So,
I will say, by the way, I want, now that we saw the tracksuit bro guys get shrunk in the truck, I want next year there needs to be a Christmas ornament
of
that truck with the little bro guys in it. Like, it's the perfect size. It absolutely needs to be a Christmas ornament.
Or if they don't somehow talk to Hot Wheels or Matchbox to do that, they are missing out.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or if we can get a Pop Rides, like, Pop Rides Trust a Bro truck. So,
overall, I thought that it was a very good season, and I think front to back, it's probably their most consistent show so far, I think, all the way through. I really liked it.
I am putting it as my second favorite.
Okay.
I thought WandaVision was just slightly better.
I was talking to Carl about that with the WandaVision. The thing that was neat with WandaVision was every week we were like, oh, I saw this. Well, maybe this is this. Or I saw that this was just like a straight. This was almost like what I wanted Falcon and Winter Soldier to be.
Yep.
I feel like they've redeemed themselves in that way, but that's where I think it's a little different from WandaVision, and WandaVision is excellent. It's like just every week we were looking for something and trying to connect these like mysterious pieces together, and that's what makes that show amazing. So
absolutely. I really feel that if it wasn't based on the Matt Fraction stuff, I probably wouldn't have liked it as much. But they had enough of that humor and that vibe to it that it really sold it for me. But as much as I love that run of Hawkeye and Hawkeye's show, I am like a guilty pleasure Scarlet Witch and Vision person. When I was like oh fuck, we got the white Vision, fuck yeah.
It was the TV shows and stuff at the beginning. It was fun to like, oh, I remember those, and to try to relive those and pick out what you remember from what show in each episode, from what old show, like Brady Bunch and stuff like that. But I think some people would probably say that at least the first two episodes were a little slower. Even if they were good, they were slower paced. Mm-hmm. And I heard, you know, I think we remember Bo saying the same thing when we first started watching those, was that was made it hard for him to get into it.
Yeah.
And if you jump in and you watch Hawkeye from the beginning, like, you don't really have that problem. So that's why I said, like, front to back, like, first minute to last minute, it's the most I guess, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but you get what I'm saying.
I do. I also feel that this one didn't make you suspend belief as much as the other shows, you know. Which is part of the charm to it. So the only thing that I wish would have been cooler is if they would have had a real stinger at the end instead of the I mean, it is super cool to see that. Yeah, because you get to see the whole I can do this all day
musical piece. We should have named this episode.
Damn it.
Next time. Missed opportunity. Damn it. I didn't even think about that.
Fuck. But I also found it cool because I'm watching it and I'm like, you know, the dude playing Howard Stark looks really familiar. And he was in Rent, like the original cast of Rent. And that's why I knew that voice. I knew it. he played like the rock star kind of guy. I can't remember what his name is. The guy that kept playing guitar and it always sounding like one of Pachelbel's suites, I think, or something. It was really funny. But anyway, I really enjoyed it. It's like my second favorite, for sure. After WandaVision, then Loki, then
I put Hawkeye above Loki.
It is. I have it above Loki.
Yeah.
WandaVision, Hawkeye, Loki.
Okay. I thought you said WandaVision, Loki. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, the Falcon one. If they do a second season, they have some redeeming to do.
Yeah. Well, you can tell that they reshot a lot of it because the story just felt off the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but if they put more Dancing Zemo in there, I think I'll be okay.
So. Yeah. I give it 9 out of 10.
I agree. Agree. So, all right. Cool. So now we're going to talk about Spider-Man. So if you've held out this long and we're cool with all those spoilers, and you haven't seen Spider-Man, you may want to actually not listen to this until you've seen Spider-Man.
Yeah, we're going to say it. We're going to say all of it.
Yeah, because we can't really talk about it without it being being full on. Like, you just can't do it. So
you pick an actor, and I'm going to pick an actor, and then we're going to say their names. A spoiler name, okay, after I do the countdown. So we'll count down, and then you can say your name of the person from this movie.
Okay.
That's how we'll kick it off. We're going to kick it off with a spoiler right off the bat.
Okay.
So, all right. We're going to go 5. Tobey Maguire.
Andrew Garfield. So
I was hoping you'd go opposite of me. It worked.
Well... he was my I enjoyed him more out of the two. All in general though, like even cool. Before this movie came out.
But Toby's had the better villains, I think.
I will agree to that.
Because Doc Ock, I mean, even Green Goblin, if you hate that suit, William Dafoe's perfect as Green Goblin. And then Doc Ock was great, even though they kind of turned him into like kind of like a good guy at the end. But that train fight scene is always going to be one of the best.
Well, even the bridge scene in this movie was really great. That fight scene was really, really good. I thought it was super good. We're already jumping around.
I just wanted to get those actors out of the way. I thought that would be a great way to kick off the spoil-filled
show.
So, but we can start back at the beginning. So,
let's talk about everything up to that bridge scene first.
Okay.
Well,
first, you get like essentially Peter getting arrested, basically, is kind of where you start. I mean, I think there's a couple minutes of like Ron's leaving. We told you
Dan had to leave too, so it's all right.
But when you see they waste no time. They're like, here's the walking cane, Charlie Cox. First big applause. It was great. I thought it was great that they got that out of the way early. And then he really was just kind of wasn't around after that. And I thought it was good because it wasn't his movie, but you wanted to get that out there.
Right.
So I thought that was cool.
With that, I feel that even with everything that goes on in the rest of the movie, I think we're going to get a callback to that, where he's going to know who Spider-Man is because of the heartbeat, the voice, and the pheromones, and all the stuff like he did in the comic, because he was like the only dude who know who he was. So I think we'll see that happen at some point, which would be cool, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Continuing on. So where's it?
So at that point, then his reputation ruins everybody's lives. Like, he can't get into the college he wants. Everybody's kind of like, ragging on him for stuff. Like, Flash Thompson makes the "I'm His Best Friend" book. And it got to the point where they couldn't even live in their apartment. They had to move in with Happy. Which I also thought it was funny that Happy and Aunt May like broke up and then this had to happen. And I'm just like, how awkward is that?
I love that he had the robot arm that Tony had a hard time with. I love that that's like he kept it as his friend.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool in my opinion too. So
the reveal at the at Happy's apartment, you know, that he still had that machine, that fabricator, was key, I think, because one later down the line we'll see about, you know, him breaking away from the Tony Spider-Man and becoming his own Spider-Man, you know. And it's interesting to think that this is his third movie, solo movie title, and sixth movie in the MCU, and that makes up his origin, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of, we'll talk about that a little more when we talk about the second act.
Yeah,
because that to me was my biggest problem with this movie. So
Well, let's Scooby-Doo this shit and get back to the first act.
Right. So the first act to me was so Sony influenced that I was like, oh God, it's like, hey, here's all the pieces of puzzle you're ever going to need to make this movie work. Here's this, here's this, here's this, here's this. Like, just so you know, pay attention, people. All these things are going to happen. So it was kind of like very, like it almost like led you along too easily. Like,
but I think that's what you get when Marvel plays with all those pieces. If Sony by themselves would have played with all those pieces and you're like, hey, build this puzzle, like it would just be like each piece glued on top of each other. It would be a mess.
I'm going to tell you right now that I today rewatched Amazing Spider-Man 1, and the exact same thing happened. It was, oh, hey, we need to have a reason for Peter to talk to Dr. Connors, and we need to have a reason that Dr. Connors is working on or is going to work on lizards to regrow stuff. And then we're going to need a reason for him to talk about this random machine that no one uses anymore that does aerosol shit that will eventually cure everyone at the end of the movie. And this, and it was just like, I was just like,
I think when you have one movie like Amazing Spider-Man 1 and it does that, and then
I watched more of them, it would do that. But
I think the thing that where it works in this one is because in order to kind of get that all out there and have the movie progress, like you almost have to say, here's all the cards. To do that from the standpoint of like, here's the first movie and here's all the pieces, kind of sucks. But like when you do it, it's the third movie and you're trying to close it out and you've got five huge villains that are going to be in it. There's almost no other way to do it but to say, here's everything and line it up.
And I didn't hate it. I just was like, oh wow, like this is kind of leading you a little too along more than normal. And it just felt very Sony to me. Like, that felt very Sony side to me. But I also saw that kind of happen in, like, the Eternals, because it was so packed with shit that you had to move very quickly and understand mm-hmm. things very fast. So they kind of did the same thing here, where it's like, there's so much stuff. We have to juggle all these plates and make sure you understand them very, very quickly. like, that's the best way I can describe it. Was, it's just, there's so much in this movie that they have to unpack a lot quickly. Mm-hmm. So I understand why they did it. I'm not mad about it. I just was like, I'm the kind of person that'll pick up on that stuff and be like, oh man, like, plot point here, plot point here, plot point here. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Follow the plots. Let's see how it goes. But yeah, so they go to that, they don't get into MIT, and then Flash gets into MIT, which blows my freaking mind that he would be able to do that. But then I remember they went to a science high school. And, you know, Flash tells Peter where this lady is. So he goes and tries to talk to her. I love that he goes in the Iron Spider suit, and then when he undoes it, it's all wrinkled. Like, I thought that was awesome.
That was pretty cool. That was a good, that was a good attention to detail. So, on that,
yeah, and then it proceeds to what I thought was actually the best fight scene of the whole movie. I thought this scene was better than the other one because it was a one-on-one. So
yeah, it was a fun, it was a fun fight scene to see both of them. But I while I thought it was a good fight scene, there's a fight that comes in later down the line with him and Doctor Strange that I thought was even better than that fight.
Cause it wasn't like that.
It wasn't a fight. It wasn't a fight, but we'll, when we get to that point,
yeah,
we'll,
it's more of a chase, we'll unpack that. But
yeah. So, so now he has to, they're working, him and the kids, they're his friends, are working with Doctor Strange. And I love that he gives him that little gold thing that he can kind of just like, shoot him and bring him back, and then the hunt's on to go find all of the any of the other villains that leaked in before Doctor Strange was ever to, you know, able to get everything closed back up temporarily. And I'm trying to think who we see. So Lizard's just already there, right?
Yeah, I found annoying that the revived villains, for the most part, I thought the only ones that looked better were Goblin and Ock. Everybody else, I thought, well, I'm going to give Jamie Foxx the 50-50 because he's not blue, but he's still not good. but Lizard is smaller than what he was in the Amazing Spider-Man movie. Like, he's human size in this. He's like 8 feet taller than the other one.
Oh man, this design on this character was so bad. How can we get away with not showing him that much and hiding him? Was because I always hated the way that they did the design on Lizard.
I thought he was fine
from that one, but I liked Jamie Foxx's Electro, as far as like, I liked the idea of him, he's on a different Earth, and kind of gave me like a Flash like vibe, where like, this Earth has a different frequency, so it's making me do this. And so I thought
that was a good way to explain away the blue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I thought that was cool that, you know, when he got here, he had different powers and he was able to form like an actual body. It just felt like Jamie Foxx forgot how to play the character that he did in Amazing Spider-Man 2 and was just being Jamie Foxx in like an Electro suit. But that being said, he didn't have like, I don't know. I think that he was far enough in the background that it didn't ruin it. You know what I mean?
Agreed. Yeah. Like, if they would have made him more front and center, I'd have been like, nope.
Yeah. I liked the joke about like, wow, you look really different. Like, last time I saw you, you had glasses and a, like a comb over. And I thought that was funny, but it was also one of the things I hated the most about that part of Amazing Spider-Man 2. Was just like, every time we do a nerd, in a movie. They have to have glasses and a bunch of books and be real like disheveled and have, you know, nerdy hair. Right. So it was fun that they made the callback to that, but I'm glad that they didn't like revisit that too much. So,
which kind of goes with my, like, so it's like I said, I rewatched Amazing Spider-Man today and I'm like, yeah, he was kind of like the dude no one talked to, and he kind of got beat up by like the the more of the jockey type bully guy, but they're all at a science school, so they're all just fucking nerds. So it doesn't matter how bad you look or whatever. Like, okay, I was like, I can believe his Peter Parker being Peter Parker a little more now, going back and watching that movie now, and kind of putting that into perspective in, you know, what, 10 years later. So
I think the thing I liked about Sandman that they did was that they just left him sand.
I hated it so much. He was the Michelin man, dude. Come on.
But that's Sandman. You know what I mean?
I hate that form of Sandman, though. Is my thing. I never liked it in the comics either.
I don't like the big like tornado-y thing. I feel like when they go and jump into that route, that's kind of like an OP move right off the bat. So by keeping him more like in a human form, I think was a way to make him more like something that you could deal with, because when he goes that gigantic form and, you know, and it's just a tornado, like how do you deal with that? So I think that's why they probably went with like the human form for most of that, was so that it seemed like something they could tackle. Cause then when you get to the end later, you'll see that he becomes something that one person isn't going to be able to tackle himself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I just thought, I just didn't like that look. I never liked that look when he was in that form in the comics. Yeah. I just don't know why they couldn't just have him back to be human form and then just be sand when he needed to be.
My guess is probably that, cause he was pretty, he was a little bit older when he did that role the first time anyways.
I was going to say, I don't think he actually mo-capped that at all. I think he just voiced it.
I think he just voiced it also. That's what I'm saying. So, but I think like when he played that role the first time, way back in Amazing Spider-Man 3, he was already a little older.
Regular Spider-Man 3.
Regular Spider-Man 3. Maybe he didn't age as well and it would have looked weird. I don't know. Because when you're sand, like, I feel like you can make yourself look like any age you want to be.
Right.
So,
right.
But
okay. So we skipped over an important section of how these guys ended up in our universe.
Yep.
So Peter is pissed off about all this crazy dumb shit that happened. So he goes to Doctor Strange and he tries to do a spell to make people forget that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. But then he keeps changing the spell and changing the spell. And Doctor Strange yells at him a lot. And eventually the spell can't be used and he just shoves it in like a little prison thing.
Yep.
But it backfires and residually pulls people who know that Peter Parker is Spider-Man into that world, which I thought was cool. I will say that I thought it would be cool to have seen like Captain Stacy randomly. Like that would have been cool. I thought it would have been cool to see like, the one villain we didn't see that definitely knew, we didn't see Topher Grace as Venom in there. That would have been hilarious though.
Thank God.
Thank God. right. But it pulled that in there. So now we can continue on with, so they're in the prison and Doctor Strange. So then they're in Doctor Strange's prison and then Doctor Strange is like
basement.
What
did he call it?
Right.
Basically, it's his basement, but he called it something. I can't remember.
Like,
what he called
the
it.
Laundry room is in there too. Uh-huh. Like I was like, what the hell? So you have the most narcissistic Doctor Strange we've ever seen, which I really didn't like at all. I thought that they cranked that to 11 and it kind of ruined Doctor Strange for me a little bit. Because I'm like, really? You can't handle teenagers? Come on, man. You hung out with this dude forever. Like, why are you such a dick to him? Like, this doesn't make any sense. So they, like, he basically is like, well, I'm going to send all these dudes back once you catch all of them. And yeah. Then I'm just going to push this button and it's going to work. So they then, he's like, no, you can't do that because then they're going to die. And
yeah, they Peter has to die.
Yeah. And Peter, not realizing that that's just their fate, just steals it from him and ensues this. Like, that is the part of the plot twist that I thought was the dumbest thing in the world. That I was like, really? You don't want, like, you're not like, oh, that's their fate. I don't want them to die. Like, that's really what your, like, your whole purpose for doing that is? Like, that's awful.
I was like,
this is the stupidest reason. I was like, no way.
No, I think it makes sense. It's, you know, it also ties back to the first two movies, how they tried to save everybody. You know what I mean? They don't want to see these guys die. They want to be able to, I feel like that cheapens the victory in their mind if they die. So if they can save the good people while also saving the bad people, then they're, you know, then they're the ultimate hero because they're doing both. So I liked the fact that he didn't want to see them die. And that was why he took that spell, because he feels like he can do it. I mean, at this point, you've seen him fight Thanos, you know,
yeah, but like,
and all kinds of different threats.
But so, here's my thing. So his whole thing is, okay, we don't want them to die. So what am I going to do? I'm going to fix them. So when they go back, they're now not superpowered. They're just going to go into that same situation and die anyway.
Well, but I mean, will they die? Will they die? How will they die when they go back? Well,
first off, the lizard was in prison.
We're assuming a lot.
So the lizard was only in prison. He never actually died. Sandman never actually died. The Dr. Octopus technically fell into a portal. Green Goblin in fact die. And then also Electro. Well, he could have just dissipated into the grid and died. So there's no real, like, the only one that actually died an actual death was Green Goblin.
That we saw. Well, right. Dr. Octopus kind of died. He sunk into the water after he had held up the framework on that. So he kind of died.
Okay. So he may have actually drowned. If not, it always felt to me like it ripped open a portal and he went through it kind of.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of how I felt that happened. But
I liked it as, and took it as, that there are deaths that we saw. And there are deaths that we didn't see, but these people essentially all got pulled from before they died.
Right.
And that whatever destructive nature, whatever path they were on, was basically leading them to that death. So by stopping that, if you can help them, if you can get them to be normal, because a lot of them, it was the power that ended up making them bad. I mean, Sandman wasn't even bad except for the fact that, like, he just really wanted to help his daughter and he was a career criminal and didn't know any other way. And you see him when he's working with Peter, when he gets everybody to Happy's loft, you see him, like, he's instantly threatened when he thinks that somebody died, you know? Mm-hmm. He's like, you just want to kill us. That's what it. And then all of a sudden it's like, I can't get back home to my daughter. But I think that that was the thing that I liked the most, was that we don't know. All we can do is assume what points that they came from and what points that they didn't. And I want to believe that by saving them, they can go back and avoid death, at least because of who they were. Maybe they'll get hit by a car when they go back. Maybe they'll die of old age. I don't know. But by saving them and stopping them from being corrupt because of whatever power they have, that maybe they can get them to avoid the death because of that. And at that point, Spider-Man can wash his hands of it. What you went back, whatever you did, I did my best to help you so you wouldn't die because of Spider-Man. And I feel like that's...
I kind of took it as the way Doctor Strange explained it was they basically got... It's almost like the Exiles. Like they got pulled right before they were going to die. So when they go back, they're still just going to die. So, because it's their fate to have that actually happen to them. So that's just how I took it. So,
which well, that's made how me we just took be it like, because that's what Doctor Strange said, because he did say that. He's like, that's their fate. And we're taking his word for it that that's their fate because he's the Sorcerer Supreme. He's older. He's done more as far as like the different things that he's seen and how many things that he's read and studied. So we're taking his word for it. But then later in the movie, he's like, huh, he actually did it. So maybe he's, you know, him second guessing himself means that maybe him declaring that was just more out of a cockiness that he knows better because he's older and not because that was really the truth. You know, he didn't want to deal with all the mess that was caused. It's easier for him to just be like, let's put everything back in the bottle. And Spider-Man's like, no, like we can fix this and we can do it the right way. And I think that shock that you see from him later when he sees that Peter did fix them puts that little bit of doubt.
Or it's like, doesn't really matter. They're going back to the same spot. So now they're just going to die without powers. Like, you know, or it's like, wow, you had me all the way out there for this. Cool.
But look at, like, but it's also like, what is it used for? And I think it's used to help the character of the hero more than what it is for the villain. We've already seen the villains and what they're going to do and how they're going to die and things like that. But how can that action and fighting through that, even after great loss, how can that shape him into being an even better superhero? Because really, this is his origin story, these movies, by the time we get to the end of this, which is crazy.
Right. And so, again, we'll talk a little bit about that here in a few minutes. Because the next thing that happens is like the thing I had the biggest problem with. So after he tries to help all these dudes, he does help Ock in there, right? A highlight at this point is we find out that there are actually 3 J. Jonah Jamesons. Like each one of them has their own. He does actually exist, and we don't need to share him from another universe. So that's a bonus. Yes. So there's a pretty good Green Goblin fight that, you know, obviously Willem Dafoe is kicking a lot of ass in. But it ends with, probably the saddest moment of the movie, where Aunt May passes away from from getting a glider to the back.
In just like a vicious fight for a movie that was very kind of like bright and I don't want to say lighthearted, but was not as very serious and dark. And then at that point, just kind of like a switch just flicked and the whole tone of the movie changed at that point, I thought.
That was terrible, by the way.
What?
The thumbs up.
I was flicking a switch.
I saw that. I was like, terrible, terrible.
I'm tired. I told you I was tired.
It's fine. It's fine. So, you know, then Aunt May delivers the line that Uncle Ben usually does. So the highlight of that for me was they finally said it right. Like, it's finally comic accurately said. The thing that bothers me is, so his whole, every single Spider-Man that's a Peter Parker, not Miles, not anybody else, mm-hmm. is their catalyst to become Spider-Man is the death of Uncle Ben, mm-hmm. right? So we did not see that happen. We don't know if we later find out that there was no Uncle Ben in this universe. And like, so at what point does he just go from, oh, I got bit by a spider and I'm going to make these things, to I'm going to be like a full blown superhero, instead of like the whole, like, I try to do something good for Uncle Ben, Uncle Ben dies, blah, blah, blah. You know, or what happened in The Amazing Spider-Man where he blew off Uncle Ben, then they had a fight and he won, like, he yeah. didn't stop the dude from robbing the place, and, you know, Uncle Ben gets caught in it. To me, that, like, that part of a hero's journey needs to happen way earlier for that to happen. But,
well, and I think Tony Stark.
But.
Okay.
So the way they ended this movie makes more of a end of a hero's journey when you set to your next section. You fight through your, like, you go through your turmoil. Usually there's some tragic event that happens, and then you are reborn as something new, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that tragic event happens so close to the end that I felt that it should have happened like in the second movie or earlier, or something else could have happened to do that. But I also feel, and this is going to sound awful, but so if you look at each of the titles for each movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Homecoming was, hey, you're going back to Marvel, right? Then Far From Home was, hey, like, you're still Marvel, but we're still a Sony property, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was No Way Home. It's, well, if this might be the last Marvel thing, so now we got to get rid of all the things Marvel specific just in case, right?
And well, see, I don't know if that was the case. That's how though. I felt it. I didn't feel that way. It felt more like part of the Marvel universe to me watching it than it did the Sony universe. And then obviously later, like 2 days later, we got the announcement that they're working on the fourth one, is already in production. But there was also a very interesting article about when Kevin Feige went to visit Amy Pascal after Amazing Spider-Man 2, and she asked for help, and he's like, I don't really know how to, like, just give advice and leave. Why don't you just let me make your movie for you, and it'll be great. And then she threw a sandwich at his face.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real thing that happened. And I thought that was funny and very Sony-like. Like, mm-hmm. I'm offering to make your stuff better for you, and you threw a sandwich in my face.
Well, I mean, they were still trying to make it. They had a trilogy planned for it, though. And that's kind of the thing.
I think the thing is, Peter was starting, we don't know how long he had been doing this kind of Spider-Man thing before Tony grabs him up for Civil War, right?
Right.
We see a little clip, and I feel like maybe that, whatever that painful act that maybe would have happened, is derailed a little bit when he comes in and says, I need you. Now all of a sudden he's going on these fantastic adventures, he's fighting Avengers in an airport, he's in space fighting aliens, and it never gets to come back there, and they're finally able to bring it back to more like a smaller level that's not like such a cosmic thing, even though I guess it kind of is in the grander scale of it. But seeing her die and knowing that we've known her for three movies, I like that a lot, because it reminded me, you know, when you read the first Spider-Man, you know, Uncle Ben's dead, you know, he's going to die in this first, you know, half of the book. Okay, well, I get that means something to him. It doesn't mean anything to me. I don't care. I don't know the guy. But in Ultimate Spider-Man, he doesn't die until the sixth issue. And I love that, because you get a feel for their relationship, and it's a lot stronger. So when she dies, I feel like that was a really great way to do that and to have her deliver that line is just how this Earth Peter is going and how his journey is progressing forward. And I think it's the thing that helps him to keep that fight going. You know, he wants to save these people and make a difference. And now one of them killed his aunt and he's ready to just kill everybody. Right.
But that's what I'm saying though. Like, I don't like him, the way he ends up then approaching the fight with Goblin at the end where he's ready to kill him. Like, it's totally out of character at that. By that point, this Spider-Man has learned better than that. He is a better person than that, or he should be a better person than that due to his the things that he's had. He should
be.
And
but he's also a young kid, too.
Right. But so, what I'm saying is he should have been a better person than that. Like, this whole thing, this whole movie really, like, washes out all of the Marvel ops stuff. If we get rid of Aunt May. We get rid of everybody that knew who he was, so he may never see Ned or MJ again. They justify the old Sony movies as now Marvel canon, as a multiverse version of it, right? And then they set it up for, well, whichever studio gets it, you got a fresh start there, buddy, and it's fine. But it just, to me, felt very awkward that they would, like, that they would wait so long to do that kind of a thing, to have that catalyst for him to be the person that we've already seen him be. Like, we saw him be the way he was supposed to be in the first two movies. Even when Mysterio was trying to kill him, you know, he was the better man, but now it's like, so Aunt May dies and now you can't remember anything she's ever taught you. Like, that to me was not, like, that to me felt very, not,
I don't think it's Marvel. That he couldn't remember everything that she taught him. I think it's more of a, now it's more personal. Like,
before, right, but that's what I'm saying. Like, he knows better. We would have seen him do it before that.
He does know better, but I'm saying the pain is what's driving him to make the wrong choices, because the anger is blinding him, because it's now on a more personal level with somebody that's at home, that's more important to him than the entire world. If he could have saved, if he could have picked between, you know, Aunt May and the world, you know, he at one point might have done that. So I like that. I don't want to spend too much time.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, but
I like that part of it. And I thought that was a really powerful scene. And I thought she delivered that death scene.
I agree with. That was like the moment I had the most problems with in this movie. Yep. Specifically. All right, so then comes the fun. Ned had stolen Dr. Strange's sling ring. He's trying to, him and MJ are trying to find Peter because they have the box to kill all the guys if he ever wants to use it. And you know, he does it, opens the portal, and he sees a Spider-Man, and they're like, is that him? And MJ starts yelling, Peter. And he's like,
hey.
Yeah. So he comes running through, and he comes through, find out it's Andrew Garfield. Which the theater I was in had more claps for him than they did for Tobey Maguire. And I was super pumped at this moment. The whole like prove it and crawl around on the ceiling thing was hilarious.
Could you grab that cobweb for me?
And then
I'm going to bed.
Then they open another portal and they pull in Tobey Maguire. And then everything about the three of them together is pretty much what I wanted, but I also felt I saw this in the multiverse movie already. Like, I saw this in Spider-Verse. Or it had tones of that. That made me just.
It definitely had tones of it, for sure.
You're rehashing, guys. Don't rehash. But my favorite part was when Ned just went, Peter, and they all just kind of did the, yeah. Like, it was kind of that kind of a moment.
We're all Peter, yeah. Ned, and he goes, sorry, Parker, and he's like, We're all Peter Parker.
It's like the computer.
yeah. So, yeah. But that was great seeing them like do the sciencey thing. You know, we didn't hang on a lot of that with this Spider-Man up until this point. So earlier in the movie, when he was fighting Doctor Strange, and you see him, he's like, oh man, this is just like geometry. He's like, oh, I can do geometry. He's like, boom, boom, boom. And you see him do like the math real quick in his head, like we know Spider-Man to do on the fly. And then to see the three of them working there together, like, oh wow, that's really interesting. Oh, I like how you did that, you know?
Right. Because we have not seen the Tom Holland Spider-Man really do a lot of science.
No.
But the other two, we did.
Web fluid, but that was about the extent of it.
Right. And we saw him like use the crazy Stark 3D printer fabricator machine a couple times. But but we never saw him actually do like science.
Yeah.
Whereas the previous two did a lot of science in theirs.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. They all kind of figured out how they're going to defeat everybody together. Mm-hmm. They made a plan. And then they show up the Statue of Liberty that is getting a Captain America shield on it.
Captain America shield.
I actually had someone ask me afterwards, why were they putting a Captain America shield on there? And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
Any of these movies?
So, then like the big fight scene at the end was awesome because you had flashes of good fight scene and mm-hmm. also like three Peters bantering with each other.
Yeah.
Like the moment where they ask Tobey Maguire if the web fluid that actually comes out of him, and then he's like,
you're making fun of me. He's like, you're making fun of me, and they're like, no, we're just generally just like really curious, like
it's
really
and cool. It's gross.
We don't have that. We have to make ours, you know. Yeah. So that was neat. I like that
Good.
I was gonna say I like that they didn't feel like the masks had to be on the whole time, and usually I wouldn't say that, but at this point it's like everybody knows who Peter is and there's three Peters. But when they put the masks on and then they all did the jump onto that scaffolding or whatever and did the pose, that part was chills. And so was the part when you saw right before that, when they come to comfort Peter after Aunt May's death, and you see the two of them up on that like cathedral in the shadows, and that whole moment between the two of them, just like, yeah, I know that line, you know, and kind of this is how we're all similar. But anyways, that's a little further back. But
I was gonna say, like, I thought it was cool that we got to see each of the previous Spider-Men do like their signature web moves. Like very specifically, we got to see Andrew Garfield do the slingshot, like where he does both hands, leans back, awesome. And then slingshots himself. I was like, yes.
He had some of the better moments in the movie, including what I think is the best moment, which was when he saved Mary Jane. Just because we know throughout the history of how much pains.
You mean Michelle Jones?
Michelle Jones, MJ.
MJ.
So, but we know throughout the history of Spider-Man how much that pains him that he, you know, thought that he made the right move. And I think that was one of the things that they really nailed in the Amazing Spider-Man 2 was that whole death scene.
Yep.
Outside of the fact when the webbing is like looking like a hand that's trying to grab in the slow motion part, which that was stupid. That was a very Sony thing to do. That whole death scene was just awesome. They just nailed it and you really felt it. So to see him jump in, you're like, when you see that, you know, this version of Spider-Man can't hold on to her, you're just like, oh no, are they really going to do it? Like, are they going to kill her off? And then he swings in and it's just like chills. That was perfect. That was probably one of the best moments in the entire movie.
So I also thought the moment where Tobey Maguire tells him, no, you are amazing. You are amazing. Yeah. Like over and over again. I was like,
yeah. cracking his back was great. He's like, back, and he's like, you want me to crack that for you? That was awesome.
I the things I wanted to see out of those conversations, though, were I wanted Tobey Maguire to be like, yeah, I married my MJ and we have a kid. Like, I was waiting for that to happen. That would have been awesome.
Well, we did get some confirmation that he's still in a relationship of some sort with her, it seemed.
It's complicated. So, right.
Yeah, it's complicated. So, and obviously Andrew Garfield had said, you know, he hadn't found his MJ yet.
Oh, yeah. And then he talked about how he stopped pulling his punches. So his Spider-Man is actually killing people.
Or very badly hurting them.
He's, to the point where somebody has to intervene them.
Right. And it's great that this whole moment can help save him from that, you know? So the fight scene with Green Goblin, and then he's getting ready to kill him. Peter's getting ready to kill him, and Tobey Maguire jumps in and just kind of gives him a little bit of a reminder of, you know, what he's trying to do, you know. And they get the cure and they get everybody back. The multiverse is starting to crack open, and you start to see the shadows of all these, you know, you see the Rhino shadow.
That was cool, and I thought seeing the
Scorpion,
Kree and the Hunter one, and the Scorpion one was good too.
Yep, that was cool. And he's like, "Do it, just, you know, make everybody forget me. That's fine. Like, do it." And I thought that was where this movie fixed part of what I hated about the One More Day storyline is. I'm in love with this woman and everybody knows who I am, but I'll sacrifice my marriage and her knowing who I am for this 80-year-old lady. Like, she's 80. She's going to die at some point. And that, but in this, it was like, the world's going to fall apart. If you don't do this spell, like, the world, the universe is gone. The multiverse is gone. So it was a lot larger scale. So his decision seems like it's an easy decision to make, and it's the right call. And I like it a lot better than just like, I want to save my 80-year-old grandma, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah, I like that better. But like I said, that also then set off that reaction of like, now no one knows who he is, so you now have a clean slate, which isn't a bad thing.
It's not, especially if Marvel's going to be in charge of it, because then they'll keep doing good things and they can distance themselves from some of the decisions that Sony probably would have wanted to make. I love one of my favorite things, and my brother reminded me, totally forgot that I had called this like 6 months ago when there was all the rumors that Tom Hardy was on the set of Spider-Man, was that I had said my hope is that he shows up somehow, he leaves a piece of the symbiote and gets sent back, and we can start this whole Venom shit over and actually make it good. And what did we get?
That's a really cop-out way to do it, though, which was
I don't even care because those movies are so bad. They could I wouldn't even care if he did pulled a Deadpool and broke a fourth wall and was like, hey, sorry, we fucked up those movies. We're going to start over now. I don't even care. Those movies suck so hard that I am totally fine with them distancing them. They don't even, Morbius movie isn't even out yet. And already they have distanced. They're like, yeah, Sony, here, we know what your scraps of whatever garbage you were making. Like, you know, we're going to do this the right way.
Yeah, but so, didn't Marvel already touch it up with Vulture and a couple other things? Vulture is going to be in the Morbius movie. Like, you see Michael Keaton as Vulture in.
But we don't know. Do we know that's Vulture? That's from this universe, or is it just another one? We don't know. So
that. Oh yeah, yeah. We don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. So for now, I'm going to go with that because it makes me happy. because I think that movie looks like it's going to be just as crappy. That they just,
I think it looks like it's going to be way better than the Venom movies.
It's going to be better than Venom for sure. But I still think it looks crappy, and I still think there's not a reason to even have had made that movie. Just like, I don't hear fans going, "Hey, where's the Morbius solo movie? When's right. that coming out?" Nobody cares. Nobody wants it. But to be able to start Venom over, and the fact that, you know, in the Venom movie, he ate Carnage. So it's like, that's it. Now I can maybe get Venom. I can get Carnage. You've got a Peter that who is, you know, nobody remembers who he is. So now you could set up a scene for him to go down this path where the more he tries and it's not working to get people to remember him, maybe the more lone and frustrated he gets, and then a symbiote attaches to him. And, you know, so there's a whole direction they can go there with that. That's going to be way better than anything that Sony did with those two Venom movies.
So. I just really hope that Danny Rojas gets another guest spot, because that's who he was talking to in the bar in Mexico.
Oh yeah.
So, well, that actor plays Danny Rojas on Ted Lasso.
Okay. Oh, okay. So, yeah. Okay.
So, but yeah, overall, I mean, I gave it a 4 out of 5. Like I said, I had some small things, mostly small things. I could not give it a 5 out of 5.
No, I'm giving it a 10 out of 10.
I know, which is 20, a 5 out of 5.
Yeah. If right. you told me it was 20, I'd say it was a 20 out of 20. Whatever the scale is, 100%.
I mean, I definitely movie. Feel it's in my top 10, but I think it's just shy of my top 5 for Marvel.
I so. Think because
But I'm also iconic. Not a Peter Parker Spider-Man guy.
No, so. I know you're not. Yeah.
Right.
I think for how iconic the Spider-Man character is for Marvel, and how, you know, little they've wanted to use him in the comics. Well, maybe because of Sony having the rights to that, kind of like how they shunned X-Men for the longest time. I thought it was absolutely a perfect way to end that first trilogy. And then it already starts on the best ground it could start. You see him in the apartment, he's sewing the costume by hand, there's no more Iron Spider stuff. He has that shiny blue with the red that just looks like really classic. And so yeah, I think it was the best Marvel movie that's ever been made by Sony.
I will say it is of the Spider-Man movies, it is now my second favorite. Spider-Man 2 is still my favorite. Like, that movie was just so good.
That, except for the Green Goblin. That Green Goblin was awful, and their decision to want to go like...
oh, no, like he was in 3.
In Amazing Spider-Man 3?
No, I said Spider-Man 2.
Oh, Spider-Man 2.
Which is the Doc Ock one.
Spider. Yeah. I thought you said Amazing.
No. That one has a 50-50 with Spider-Man 3, depending on which day of the week I'm on, because there's really bad on both of those accounts.
Yeah.
So, but overall it was very good. Everyone should go see it. I'm going again like tomorrow now. With a buddy of mine. So
$812 million worldwide as of today, or before today.
Who said theater was dead?
And guess what? That's not even including China, because it hasn't released there yet.
Yep.
So, yeah, those are like on par with getting close to like Endgame numbers. It beat out the new James Bond movie, which did 770 in, you know, that time frame.
It is the highest opening for 2021 and 2022.
Yeah, together. It is.
It's crazy.
It's gonna kill. So they would be smart to keep this in theaters for as long as they can.
So. Yeah. Yep. Just don't even put Matrix in there. Just fill another theater of Spider-Man.
Yes. So.
Anyway, thanks a lot, guys. All right. We went pretty long tonight, so I'm just trying to cut it. But thanks for sticking with us, those three of you that watched the whole time. We hope you guys have a great happy Christmas, and we will see you right before the new year next year or next week.
Holidays.
Yeah, one more. Yep. Maybe we'll do a what comics we were thankful for in 2021
in 2020
or next week,
or what or just maybe comic moments, because I've got to put Nick Spencer just not being on Spider-Man anymore is like probably
top. Yeah. Things that happened in the comic industry
in comics
in 2021 that we're happy for. Yes. Yeah. We may not even review books. We may just do this. So
I'm gonna start my list. How many do you want to do? Do you want to do like the top five? Do you want to do the top 10?
Let's do 10, and if we have to cut it to 5 because we're running long, we'll do that. It'll depend on how many books come out next week, and we actually decide.
Okay.
But thanks again for listening, guys, and watching and hanging out.
Thursday,
and
we Warriors.
Catch you guys laters.
Peace.